Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest is Joe Frodsham. He's the CEO of Career Management Partners, and he's also the author of a new book, Don't Dread a Monday, with co-author Marianne Pena. Joe, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here, David. Thank you for having me on.
Well, you know, don't dread Monday. I know it's Saturday today as we're ready on this show, but Monday is just one of those things some people do dread. And what made you decide with Marianne to, you know, author this book?
Well, great question. You know, it's interesting. You're absolutely right. In fact, one study showed up to 60% of people have a clinical level of slight depression to significant depression on Sunday nights because they're dreading Monday morning. I think it's the underreported issue of our day. A lot of, if not most of us, don't really love our career, don't really love our job. And when you realize the majority of our lives are spent on the job, at least as an adult, a mediocre career leads to kind of a mediocre life. And so we just had to address that. I mean, we've worked with professionals for years and years and years, and I think we've isolated those kind of key principles, falsehoods and truths that go into making a great career. So we finally sat down and really birthed the book, and we're really proud of it.
No, you should be. It's your guide to a lifetime of career success. Don't dread Monday. You know, when you were thinking about writing the book and started to put down some of these thoughts, what was the biggest surprise that you and Marianne came across in writing the book? What was it that stuck out as the one thing maybe that you didn't expect to, you know, uncover as you went through this process?
Well, just how pervasive this whole career disenchantment thing is. You know, the fact that most people really do not love getting up and going to work every day, and that they work under this false assumption that they got to get up and do something they don't like so they can live and exist and go on, and that they put themselves in this box of what they think they're supposed to do, even though it's not something they enjoy most of the time. So just how pervasive this career disenchantment is was enormous kind of a surprise to us, I guess. And, you know, foundationally, that those few folks who have really created a great career do things very differently than the rest of us, you know? They do things that are counterintuitive, but when you do them, they really tend to work. So I guess just how pervasive the career disenchantment is and how the advice, if people apply it, counterintuitive advice can really make a difference.
You know, when you said that, obviously we have what they call the Sunday night blues, you know, somebody who is getting ready to go to work the next day and they're really getting in some ways even sick or emotionally, you know, distraught about that thought. There are a lot of factors, obviously, with individuals who are going to work. Some have to go to work. You know, financially tied to having to make sure they do this job or they have a family. How, when you were going through this book, and we're certainly going to break it down as we go through the show today, how did you find that emotional connection to the things that they have to do were a big factor in why people did what they did?
Oh, absolutely. That's the box that people feel they put themselves into. You know, I go to the grind of a job, and it really is a grind for as many people, because I have responsibilities. You know, I have a duty to my family, I have a duty to my community, I have a duty and responsibility to be independent and not rely on others. I mean, these are all really good principles and the things that, you know, they should care about, you know, obviously doing well and living up to their fiduciary responsibility at home. And as a result, they're very, very risk averse and they, you know, don't even explore things that may in any way endanger their current income and current job or employment. And so that's legitimate. You know, we, you know, putting this book together, it is a pragmatic set of principles that can work for folks in that situation because that's most of us. And it isn't some hairy-fairy set of, you know, platitudes. It really is a pragmatic set of principles at work with a systemic, methodical approach to applying them to your world. So those are stressors, no doubt about it, David. You know, you have them, I have them, we all have them. So how do you still do what you love and make it work so that you're really kind of happy and excited on Sunday night?
We're talking with Joe Frodsham. He's the author of the new book, Don't Dread Monday, Your Guide to a Lifetime of Career Success. We have co-author Mary Ann Pena. Deb will solve that problem on the taping side. Sorry about that. You know, one of the things that you define in here is career success. And I'll let you obviously give your definition of what career success is. But is it different once you define it for us? Is it different for different people?
Great question. Principally, no, but pragmatically, yes, it's different for different people. So let's define it. You know, career success is fundamentally doing what you love, not dreading Monday, but being excited about Monday, and then being supported adequately in doing it. That simple. There's not a particular money target there. There's not a, you're going to be the CEO of your company. You may or may not be. But a lack of success is hating your job. Career success is loving your job and doing well enough to meet all your responsibilities as a result of it. So that's the simple definition. Now, when you begin with the end in mind, you know, you hear interview those people who have been radically successful in a more public sense, you know, whether it be Jack Welch or a variety of other folks that are less well-known, inevitably in an interview, they'll always say, I love my job. I just love what I do. Now, we almost think it's trite and we move on. But when you park it there, you realize that is the ultimate litmus test. Do you love what you do? And what we found is when you truly do have the self-insight to know what you love and bring it into your work, it makes all the difference. Your level of discretionary effort goes up. Your mind sees greater and deeper and broader opportunities and possibilities to in the work itself. And fundamentally, people are drawn to it. You know, they see and feel very different energy from you. So doing what you love does attract success and does attract other people to follow you. So a lot of people say, well, I wish I could do what I love. I would say to be successful, you have to do what you love. It's a requirement for success.
You talk about a formula in the book. It's actually first introduced on page 13. Again, the book, Don't Dread Monday. Your heart plus self-insight equals your success. Define that, you know, that, if you want to say, formula.
Well, it's great because, you know, as we just identified, you know, the common thing we found among those 3 to 5% of people who are constantly doing what they love and being rewarded well for it is that they made a deep choice to do what they love, and they knew what that was. Most people don't. Most people kind of bump through life, and some days, some weeks, some years, their job is better than other years. But they haven't done the self-insight to identify what is common when I actually love my job, what is common when I hated my job, and everything in between. And what we found is that there's a couple of core needs that each of us have, but they're different for every person. So that's where the self-insight comes in. What are my core needs? What is it that I uniquely and specifically need in order to be successful and happy in my job? And for some people, that might be independence. For some people, that might be sense of the aesthetic. For some people, it's to be able to dive deep on certain things. For other people, it's to think and operate strategically. Whatever it is, what are those core needs that are unique to me? That's the self-insight. And those core needs are attached to what I love. And then when you bring those core needs that you've identified through your self-insight into your job in a deliberate fashion, it reframes everything. Sometimes it requires you to change your job or refine your job or just look at your job differently. But that self-insight and understanding of your core needs attached to your loves, what you enjoy the most, is the formula, as you call it, to really then creating the foundation for a great career.
You say on the same page, broadly speaking, we all want the same thing, a great career doing what we love that's being supported, that is recognized and rewarded for it. So if we all want it, why is it so elusive? That's a really great question. Why is it so elusive?
Because organizations are not in the business of helping us align with what we love, right? That's something we got to do. And I think most of us are, I would say, institutionalized. You know, from a very young age, 5 years old, we're put into a school where we're told to sit down, sit up, don't chew gum, comply. And then we go through a standard set of curriculum that is, through all those imprintable years, we're told to comply, do what the organization says, be obedient, do what's right, and then go off to college and do the same thing. What we found is to organize a great career, it takes non-compliance a little bit. Not that you're going to be a rebel in your organization, but instead of just now jumping into the organization and doing what you're told and hoping that it's something you enjoy and that the world will take care of you, you got to do a lot more independent thought. You got to step back and say, I know what the organization wants, but they're not asking me what I want. So I got to identify that for myself. I got to identify what my core needs are, and then if and how I can make it work in this organization. Often they can. Most of the time they can, but not always. And so, you know, why it's so elusive, because there's no class on how to identify your core needs and shape a great career based on it anywhere in any school in any college that I'm aware of. Instead, we've been institutionalized and programmed and conditioned to do what the organization wants us to do. And again, it doesn't ask us what we love. It just tells us. And, you know, you and I, David, we run companies, right? I get that. It's no one's fault. But when the few companies that really systemically and methodically have people answer that question, what do you love to do? What are your core needs? How can we bring it into your work? That taps into a level of engagement that is sustainable and doesn't take one more cent, just some systemic, thoughtful conversations.
On the page 14, the next page, in Don't Dread Monday, Your Guide to a Lifetime of Career Success, you talk about the second truth is much of the widely accepted career advice is false and even toxic. That's pretty tough stuff, Joe.
It really is. It's very tough stuff, but it's absolutely true. Again, why do most people hate their career where they spend most of their lives? And what we do know is that your happiness is based upon your belief system, and then, you know, your choice is based on that. And so another reason there's such pervasive unhappiness with people's careers because they've organized it based on very pervasive toxic ideas on what it takes to be successful in your career. In our book, we outline 10 of these myths and corresponding truths. You know, some of them, like myth 2, to get ahead, you just need to do a good job. Yeah, I wish that was true, David. I really do. Fundamentally, I wish it was just a matter of us doing a great job and then just loving it and getting ahead. What we found is that doing a great job is necessary but not sufficient, and that we have to recognize and navigate and operate within the political realities of the organization we're in. Another one that's just a really, and this may spin your wig a bit, and so I'll be careful to explain this one. Another myth that we've bumped into is it is important to have work-life balance. That's a myth. Now, let me explain that. It's not that we think that you shouldn't have balance in your life. What we found is that the old crusty definition of work-life balance is really bad, because what it presumes is that you have a certain number of acceptable hours in which you work, say 35, 45, 50 hours, whatever it is for you that you work, and then you get on with your, quote, life. What we found is that work and life are one thing. So you hate to start about finding your life's work, and then you have a lot more energy for everything else. So balance is important, but don't think that work and life are two different things. Bad definition. So there's a number of those, I would say, myths and corresponding truths that we start the book on. We go through these 10 and make sure people really go through it, understand the kind of true, not the myths, understand where maybe they had some bad beliefs that were really helping derail them from really having and creating and making a great career.
When we go to break, we're going to come back and talk about the care cycle of career success. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. So first, I want to thank our guest sponsors today. Jackson Lewis, All We Do Is Work. Redmond Winchell, Counselors at Law. Sheehan Finney, Verrill Dana, Attorneys at Law. And, of course, StrategicHR.com. I want to thank them for being sponsors of the HR Power Hour today. Okay, our guest today is Joe Frodsham. He is the author of Don't Dread Monday, Your Guide to a Lifetime of Career Success. He's, of course, co-authored this book with Mary Ann Pinner, and the two of them are talking about the exciting parts of this book. First, we talked about some, if you want to say, myths that are out there in regards to somebody's career success, right? And you kind of give a, if you want to say, model called CARE, the cycle of career success. Can you explain why a new model in the career industry is needed today?
Great. Well, you know, a model is needed, I think, and it's a really good model because it helps people pragmatically and thoughtfully and methodically work through and apply the principles to themselves. And, you know, you're right, there's a lot of career books out there. But those career books, there's some great ones. Certainly I've read them. But what I found is they tend to be at a very high level, with a lot of platitudes and thoughts and insights, but not an organized way to really apply it to yourself. So the CARE model is a methodical, C-A-R-E, kind of step one through E process that people can use to really emerge with choices and a declaration that really sets them on a very productive path with their career.
So you talk about CARE being challenge and change. Just give a quick overview of what that means under the C part of CARE.
You bet. Well, challenge and change kind of relates to what we talked about just before the break, which is most people have a set of toxic or erroneous assumptions on which they're building their career. And so the first one is you have to challenge those beliefs if you want behavioral and results change. And so we actually start this one, it's funny, with a survey called the Career Success Indicator, and it's 25 questions that we find, and people at the end of it get a score from 0 to 50. The lower the score, the worse. The higher the score, the better success they're having in their current career. And, you know, when you think of 0 to 50 with 40, anything over 40 is pretty dang good. Anything over 30 to 40 could be better. Under 30 is a problem. The vast majority of folks who've taken this survey are in a problem state. And I'll give you one example, quick story. I actually had someone take this, and then they circulated it to their department. This is a department in a to-remain-nameless school district, right, in Texas. And so a number of people actually took this survey, and the average score was 16. That's 16, David, 16 out of 50. Now, for your listeners who may go to don'tdreadmonday.com and actually complete this survey, 16 is a horrendously low score for any individual, let alone a large department in a school district that is responsible for training and developing our children. What we have to do is challenge, and it starts with self-awareness. Where am I at currently? And then what are my beliefs that are getting in the way for me really organizing a much better career?
Well, you know, you talk about some of the questions, and I'm just going to do two of them because I think it's a good illustration of somebody. Again, if they go to don't, monday.com, you can take this survey. You can also buy the book there. I will mention that for you, Joe. You can buy the book at don'tdreadmonday.com. One of the questions you ask here is, I never catch a break where I work, on one side of the coin, and then the other side, there is an abundance of opportunities. I don't have time to chase them all. And then another one said, I feel sad or disengaged at work. On the flip side, I feel energized, challenged, and happy with my work. So you talk about this indicator assessment, which is basically an assessment that talks about somebody's level of where they are today. Do you find that as people take this, there are more people on the less than 25 of the 50 or over 25 of the 50?
Great question. So, you know, the most you can get is 2 points on any of these questions. So the highest is 50. You would write, if they're all in the middle, the score would be 25. The average score is about 21. All right. When we've actually measured this over time, thousands of people, 21. 21 out of 50. So that would say the predominant scores are zeros and ones, with once in a while a two. So you can see how there really is, if that's any kind of indicator, and I think it is, a huge opportunity for individuals and organizations to tap into and think about careers in a much different way. Those two questions you're coming up are great ones. You know, I never catch a break where I work. There's an abundance of opportunities. I don't have time to chase them. What we found is that people will blame their job, their work, their company, if they don't do what they love. But research has shown, actually some relatively recent research on positivity, that when you feel better and look at your job in a more positive sense, and it is getting those needs met, that you see more resources in your environment. You automatically, your brain sees more possibilities and opportunities. So much of it is really up to us and how we frame and look at our job and the beliefs and the needs that they may or may not be met. And so those are great indicators, not of where they work and what opportunities they actually have, but how they look at their work and if their needs are being met and if they see those opportunities.
So when people are talking about their career, and as we segue off for just a second, you obviously have this assessment that works well for individuals, right? People who are trying to determine about their true career. But it also works, as you said, for departments or companies or organizations that are looking at where is the engagement level of the team, of the group, of the company. Talk to us a little bit about maybe the difference of how that you look at this result from a individual side or a corporate side.
It's great question. Individual, obviously, they get individualized feedback. When we run it through departments and organizations, what we found is that a lot of times there's a lot of variability within an organization, department to department, on the average scores that you see on each one of these surveys that are completed. And in those few organizations where we see consistently high scores in a particular department, when you scratch below the surface, go in and talk to people, you find that there's something very different there, where the manager really has promoted and had discussions with their employees around what do you love, what do you enjoy about your work, you know, how can I help and organize a job that meets your needs in a way that also meets the organization's needs. And what we found is when you have those conversations in a thoughtful, systemic way, which we talk about in the book, how you can do that, that people are engaged from the inside out. You know, it's less about carrots and sticks, like more money and more punishment, and it's much more about how do we tap into that which is already in you, what you love, and then how you can bring that out in a thoughtful, pragmatic way in your work. When that happens, not only the scores on this survey go up, but retention is higher, engagement is higher, performance is higher, everything is higher without spending a cent, just because they've used this methodology to tap into the innate motivation that's there.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB. We're talking with Joe Frodsham. He is the author of Don't Dread Monday with his partner, Marianne Pina. And it's your guide to a lifetime of career success. Joe, during this CARE cycle of career success, and we're talking about C right now of CARE, which is challenge and change, one of the truths that you talk about is number 10 is paying your dues truly is a waste of time. Talk about that. Because that really seems counterintuitive to the way businesses want you to work.
Yeah, it really does. Don't get me wrong. You need to be able to work hard, and we expect you to work hard and not complain so much. But what we found is that people have this assumption that if I just work hard, and then ultimately they'll take care of me, whoever they is. I'm still trying to meet they in the organization, right? And the reality of it is you do need to work hard, but you need to see alignment of what you love and what you want to do. So paying the dues as far as doing something I absolutely hate for an extended period of time, so that then they'll take care of me and give me something that I like to do, which is essentially the assumption base that a lot of people have, is wrong. They, whoever they are not counting and not documenting how much you did or sacrificed for the organization. And ultimately, you need to work hard, but you need to make sure that from day one, you know what your needs are and that you're insistent on getting those needs met. And so paying the dues, the crusty definition of doing what you hate for an extended period of time so you can be taken care of, just doesn't work.
You know, one of the things that I find interesting is, as I look through the truths that you put in this first section, is the fact that some of these, as you have said, is your traditional career advice. And so how did you and Marianne come to the conclusion that this advice was so counterintuitive? And why do you think it's still so prevalent in the industry?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because this really came through a study for over a decade. You know, I run this company, Career Management Partners, where we're talking to executives, leaders, professionals at all levels about their career. You know, and so there's a lot of anecdotal evidence and a lot of then more analytical, quantitative evidence that suggests, again, that most people are in the midst of kind of a lousy or mediocre career. And, you know, when we started to explore that, what we found is that there's 3 to 5% of people who love their job consistently over time in a sustained way and are being rewarded for it. So when you interview them and you really get to know them as kind of a group to analyze, and then you talk to the masses, what you find is that they had very different conception of how to manage and make a career work. And that's where we ferreted out these 10 myths and truths. These 10 truths were what those 3 to 5% of folks who love their career consistently organize around. Whereas the 90-plus percent that don't love their career, organizing around the myths. And that foundation, that false cracked foundation, was the underlying reason that they were continuing to not get the results they wanted within their career. And so it really came through, you know, looking at those two groups, what's different in the belief systems of each, and how does that explain very different results. So we feel very, very strongly in these myths and truths. And we feel very confident. And if someone took this book and did nothing but take the Career Success Indicator, best understand the 10 myths and truths and stop there, they would get very different results over time. Now, we don't want them to stop there. There's a whole methodology with the rest of the care model. But that's how we came up with it. And again, they are the foundation.
So we're talking about the care model, the cycle of career success. Again, the book is Don't Dread Monday, and you can get it at don'tdreadmonday.com and take the assessment there. The second section of care is the A, of course, awareness of yourself. This would seem pretty obvious, right? This is kind of one of those things in which it's your career, you should be aware. Why are so many people not aware of themselves and what the situation they've put themselves into?
Well, it's funny because, you know, feedback's tough. Self-insight takes time, and most of us don't have a technology or a methodology or a person that will help us do that. Yet, you know, as is often said, an unexamined life is not worth living, right? Especially when it comes to your career. It's where we spend our time. So, you know, what we offer in the book is a thoughtful, pragmatic, simple approach to get the type of insight on yourself and on your own core needs that will propel you to a much more enlightened career.
You talk about an exercise in the book, another exercise, which is discovering what you love. And without getting into everything about the process, it does say to take a few minutes to answer a couple of questions. Talk to us a little bit about why finding, discovering what you love is so critical to the passion of having career success.
Yeah, you bet. So just quick capsule. It really asks two questions, right? The first question is, if you had 5 years to live with great health, what would you do? And then the next question is, if you had, you know, 50 years to live, but unlimited wealth, put a number in there, 100 million, let's put that in there, that'd be fun, what would you do? What we found is that whatever's on both lists are those things that are really important to you, when you have limited time and then unlimited resources. Now, what people will say is, okay, I'd love to go hike the Himalayas and take photos. But, Joe, I can't make a living doing that. And I would say you're right. You probably can't make a living doing that. But each one of those passions that are on those two lists identifies or is meeting something much deeper for you. It's meeting a set of core needs. And uncovering those. So that person who likes to hike and take photographs really has a need for exploration and independence. Perhaps that's their core needs. So we go through a very simple process in the book of identifying what do you love to do, and then what couple of needs are all those things you love to do meeting. And for each of us, those core needs are different. Now, the reason it's important to know those core needs is because then that person who says, I love to hike and take photos of the Himalayas, yeah, but what that's really meeting is a need for independence and, exploration. Is there any way that you can get this need of independence and exploration met in your career? And the answer is generally yes, right? You just got to look at your current job differently, or maybe refine your current job, or maybe retrench in a different job. But what they'll find is when those needs, whatever they are for them, are being met, when they look backwards in their career, they find that's when they were happiest. And so then it's a matter of organizing your career, and often in your current company, so that those needs are consistently being met over time. So that simple process, it's not getting on a couch and talking to a therapist for hours and hours and days, nothing like that. This is a very pragmatic approach to get at your core needs. And then through the rest of the book, how do you then organize your work, make a declaration, and then work your organization, wherever you choose to work, to get those needs met?
We're talking with Joe Frodsham. He's the author of the book, Don't Dread Monday, Your Guide to a Lifetime of Career Success. You can, of course, get that book at don'tdreadmonday.com, or, of course, at the end of the show at the HRPowerHour.com. We will have a link directly to that for you. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest has been the one, the only, Joe Frodsham. He's the author of Don't Dread Monday, Your Guide to a Lifetime of Career Success. We've been talking about some of the myths in career, and we've been talking about a new process called Care Cycle of Career Services. That's C-A-R-E. The first phase was, of course, challenge and change, and we talked a little bit about that in terms of making sure that we understand the truths behind it and some of the ways that we're going through the process. The second one, in terms of the A, was self-awareness or awareness of yourself. And now we're going to be talking about the third section, which is CARE, is C-A-R, is reveal the path. Joe, reveal the path to us, man. Tell us how to move forward. It's not like a reveal the path. So tell us, how do you find that career fit?
Well, great. So once you identify your core needs, it's like, well, this is great. I have self-insight. I see why and when I'm happiest in my career. And then it really is fundamentally looking at the world of options. And we, in a very pragmatic way in the book, help people look at the risk and the amount of change that goes with all the different options, right? We ask people to explore. And what we fundamentally find is that people will do one of three things. Either they will ultimately look at their current role in a different way and reframe their current role, or they will find and make some changes to their current role, or they will need to retrench and find something completely different, right? And I'll give you an example. In the book, we identify this one woman named Annette. She was a tax preparer, and she used to kind of work. Tax season was real busy for her, and I remember taking my tax into her, and she, you know, went on and on about how she really didn't like her job, and, you know, she wished she could do something else, but she's, you know, 10 years from retirement, and there it went. And then went through the process of really, in this long discussion, talking through what do you love to do and what are your core needs. And what she identified was her core needs were to make an impact on people and to really have a creative orientation. And as we discussed with her more, well, you know, you are really having an impact on people. Maybe you see this as paper shuffling, but fundamentally, you're making or breaking people's year, their lives, their holidays. And, you know, and there is, you know, different ways of being that creative orientation into this, with the getting, quote, creative with accounting itself. And it really helped her reframe her job, and her level of engagement went up almost immediately when she was able to look at her job in a way that really helped her see how it was meeting those core needs. So the, you know, just reframing your current job, refining it, where maybe you make a few changes. And I've seen that with someone who is the head of benefits and compensation for a very large Fortune, you know, 100 company. He just did not like coming to work every day, hated it. And, you know, fundamentally was, you know, when we got to his core needs, he had this need to really think and operate strategically and to really be, you know, much more visionary, whereas he felt he was getting in the mire and the detail and the things that he just dreaded, the meetings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what we were able to do through a couple of weeks is coach him to offload some stuff to other people who valued that work so he could spend much more time doing the things that he was most engaged in. And ultimately, because he was engaged in it, he could offer a lot more value. So he had to refine his job. And then once in a while, people have to retrench. You know, and I've got story after story of that. I actually had a person a few years ago when I was heading up talent acquisition for a computer company. He just fundamentally came in one day and said, "I hate my job." And he's a recruiter. And that's a problem because they're supposed to be selling the company. And when we went through the process and ultimately he identified his core needs, we realized that he just probably was not going to be able to get those core needs met in his particular role. And so we went through a few months a retrench strategy that put him in a different department where he's able to have less people interaction, much more deep dive detail, you know, oversight of things, and he became a much happier person. So this reveal the path starts with, are you going to have to reframe, refine, or retrench? And then, you know, ultimately, as we get to E, and we'll talk about in a sec, it's executing that plan.
So you're talking about passion, right? So that's someone's inner core, somebody who actually wants to think about what they truly deeply need. There are, of course, individuals out there who have a lot of passion for things they want to do, but they may or may not be able to afford or be in a situation where they can move to a different role, or a company may not be big enough where they can move them to a different role, or they may not have the risk tolerance, if you might say, to move to that passion side. How do you see people moving from, or getting, I should say, over that risk hurdle to make that move?
Well, that's a good question. In fact, what we share in the book is a 2x2 matrix, right? Which is, you know, what is the risk and what is the impact in getting your needs? And what we find is that often when you kind of do the analysis against this 2x2, often people don't have to assume a lot of risk, you know? Even per the examples I just shared, looking, just reframing your current role or making some small refinements to their current role was a lot less risky and involved a lot less change than what they were thinking previously that they needed to do to be happy, which was, you know, quit it all and start a blog and go to the Himalayas. No, you don't need to do that. Just offload some stuff and bring in some other stuff. So often this book actually reduces the amount of risk that they feel that they have to impose in order to be happy and successful. So that's the first thing. But when there is significant risk that might need to be introduced, then, you know, we need to manage it. And that's really where you get into execute the plan. You know, how do you organize those key stakeholders in your world and environment so that you're able to transition in a way that increases your probability of success.
And, of course, we're talking about Don't Dread Monday, the book that Joe Frodsham and his partner Marianne Pinner has written. Of course, you can get it at don'tdreadmonday.com, or you can go to hrpowerhour.com as well after the show. And we're talking about the CARE plan, which is the cycle of career success. And, of course, as you just said, Joe, CARE meaning E, the last one, execute the plan. It sounds so simple. Right? It sounds so simple. Find your passion, get excited about it, and go that plan. But execution can be messy. So how do you make sure that it's not messy and that you actually can do it and make it a real-life dream?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. And that is where you really got to take action. And, you know, step four, which is in execute the plan, is, first of all, what we say, declare your career. And what we found is that by coming out of the closet, career closet, so to speak, and saying, this is what I really want to do, this is what I love to do, will mobilize people all over the place. You know, we actually walk through how you can do that in a very thoughtful, systemic way. Talk to your boss, talk to your coworkers, certainly let people you know that, hey, I'm really looking to do X, or this is what I want to do Y. And what we found is that when people are clear with what they want and what will make them happy, automatically, people want to help them. They just want to help. They get excited when you get excited. And, you know, so the biggest part of it is just being open about it. You know, the example I gave before where I had a recruiter come in my office and say, I'm not happy and I want to be happy with my job. You know, I thought that was a great conversation. I appreciated him being open and honest. And then when we got to the career choice that would really make it work, I did everything I could to help him. And I don't think I'm a greater, better manager than anyone else. I honestly think when people are straightforward with what they'd love to do and declarative about it, people will want to help them do it. Now, the next thing we found is that there's this thing called be the players in executing your plan, meaning that there's usually two or three, quote, stakeholders or key people that are going to determine whether you're able to get that done or not. Identifying who those level one players or stakeholders are, and then jumping in their shoes and saying, you know, given what I want to do as far as refining my role, reframing my role, or retrenching, how can I be a solution to them? So one of those might be your boss. One of those might be the head of human resources. One of them might be the head of a department that you want to move into. Whoever those couple of, at the most handful of key stakeholders are, we kind of talk through a process of really jumping into their skin, looking back at you, and being a solution to them. So they not only are okay with you perhaps moving into a new role or changing your current role, but will advocate for it because they see why it's in their self-interest. So declare it, and then for those key stakeholders, make it in their self-interest to support you.
You talk about being patient and being observant as one of the key areas that you have to be during this process. How patient and how observant?
Well, it's a good question. I think that's, you know, gauged by everyone. You know, an immature response would be, this is what I want to do. I want to do it yesterday, and if you don't let me, I'm leaving. And that's not, you know, when people do that, it's, you know, usually doesn't get them very far. But what you want to see is motion toward. I'll give you an example. There was an individual who works for a large medical device company in Michigan, great guy, and we were coaching him through this process here late last year. And at the end of it, he wanted to go to a department that would require him to move to New Jersey. And realizing that that was a significant departure, both from a role and location, and that it certainly could involve some resistance from key stakeholders, we spent a good hour going through each of the three key stakeholders who would have to agree to this and what each of their needs are and how this could be a solution to them. So instead of walking into their office and saying, this is what I want, he walked into their office and said, this is a solution for both you and I, and worked it with them. And he's now in the process of finalizing his move and getting his family over to New Jersey for personal reasons, and professionally it's ended up being a really good thing for him, too. So to answer your question, it took him 6-7 months, right? But it's a pretty significant change. And he was gauging that it was working because he was seeing progress. He was seeing people consider it. He's having meetings held. Ultimately, then, they started looking at positions there. He had the conversation with the boss out there. So he methodically worked the plan and saw the actions and the response that would tell him it was moving in the right direction. If you don't see a response that's telling you it's moving in the right direction, then either you're not doing it right or maybe it just won't work for you there. But rarely is that the case. We found that if you're patient, observant, and you keep working it, and specifically working the key stakeholders, you know, ultimately it will bear fruit.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we're talking with Joe Frodsham. Don't Tread on Monday is the book. And we will be right back on News Talk 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com and main.dalecarnegie.com. Of course, remember that at the end of this show, you can go to hrpowerhour.com, and you'll be able to listen to this show again and make sure that you pick up the great tips. And also, order Joe's book, Don't Dread Monday, Your Guide to a Lifetime of Career Success. You can also, of course, go to don'tdreadmonday.com, and you can take the assessment there if you want to. I think it would be great for everybody to think about and see where you are on the scale in terms of your current career engagement. And that's called Career Success Indicator, a great thing for you to do. Joe, as we get ready at the end of the show here and we wrap up in the next few minutes, one of the things that I wanted you to discuss, because I think it's very important, and you've talked a great job about your book. I think it's a great book. You and Marianne did a fantastic job. And we know how important it is to get the support of your boss, your support of your coworkers. How important, as I think it would be, to have your family on board, your spouse, your partner, somebody at home that can help you during these assessments, these difficult times, these changes? How important is it to have that support at home?
Well, that's a great, great question. I mean, the reality of it is we are holistic beings, and kind of the old mechanistic thinking that work is different than home and we need to separate them, we know that's not true. You know, you go home and the conversation around your dinner table often is, what'd you do during this day? And for us that work, that's work, right? And, you know, they don't know you if they don't know what's going on in that big part of your job and your life and your work. And you would want to know that for them, too. And so, you know, anytime you're saying, what do I love and what are my core needs, inevitably you want to bring them in. One is, it helps them understand you. And two, they're able to support and bring insight because they know you best, right? When you talk to your spouse, they're the ones that tell you the truth. I mean, David, I know that's true for you, right? You go home and, you know, they're not tapping around the dance, right? Your wife's going to tell you what she thinks. So they can be the best, most insightful partners in this career process of helping you better understand yourself and then helping you think through ultimately your options and being that safe outlet when you complain and things aren't going so well or when you need a third-party perspective. That's what a family's for.
No, you're right. Know? I mean, when you think about the fact that when people make decisions, there are impacts to your decisions, right? All decisions have impacts on your life, and it's important to align that so that your work, your family, are all in alignment. And if you're going to make these decisions that are you know, that could have an impact on your life, that could have an impact on what you do, I think is important that everything aligns together and that there is that support mechanism at home.
It really is. I mean, you know, we are holistic beings, and we're not going to be as effective in one part of our life if the other one's not. Those needs and issues aren't being met. And the great thing about this self-insight that comes from a simple exercise of identifying your core needs is, you know, it can help improve relationships. It helps you understand them and them you. Often we've seen people have gone through this process, have their spouse go through it, and even their kids. So they all know what each other's core needs are, and helps them identify, well, how do we operate as a family? How do we want to spend our weekends? And you know, how can we bring and do things that we have joy doing more in our life? So I think it does translate. And two, you're right, when you do make changes or declarations at work, you want to bring your family and those significant others into it. They can support you, and certainly anything that may impact them, they should know about. So, yeah, bringing home into it with this process, I think, is always a very positive thing for everybody.
No, it really is. And Joe, I want to thank you and Mary Ann for writing this book. I think you did a great job explaining it today, and I hope the audience goes right out and buys it at don'tdreadmonday.com. Again, it is the book, Don't Dread Monday, Your Guide to a Lifetime of Career Success. And I want to wish both of you very, very strong success on the book. So I appreciate it for you being on the show today.
Hey, thank you, Dave, and have a great week.
Absolutely. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
Hi, this is Tawny Alvarez at VeralDana. Let's talk about affinity groups. Affinity groups are groups organized based on social identity, shared characteristics, or life experiences. The creation of affinity groups comes with both risks and rewards. Rewards can include attracting, recruiting, and retaining employees, promoting diversity, cultural awareness, and an inclusive work environment, increasing employee morale, job satisfaction, and productivity. Also, it provides a supportive group for employees, or can be used to enhance recruitment, marketing, business development, and the employer's public image. Further, affinity groups can foster development and learning through mentoring, networking, and exchange of ideas. Risks, however, come in the form of discrimination or harassment claims under the ADA, Title VII, and the ADEA, or other state laws based on the topics discussed or comments made during group meetings that employees find offensive. That the employer doesn't recognize all affinity groups, that the employer treats some affinity groups and or their members differently from others, or that some employees oppose the mission of certain affinity groups. Additionally, employers should be mindful of wage and hour issues under the Fair Labor Standards Act or state wage and hour laws. Employers should compensate employees for time spent participating in these affinity groups. To further discuss these issues, contact a member of VeralDana's Labor and Employment Practice Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.